So the CIA engaged in a deliberate plan to mislead the American media and to mislead the American people. Wrote it down. I mean, it put it in emails that their goal was to mold public opinion, was to shape news stories. Wow. What do you think about that? That this organization that has license to kill, represents America around the globe, one of the most hated organizations in modern history, despicable in terms of its behavior, that this organization that is given such license, specifically sought to mislead, to shape stories. That means to, really, does not reveal the facts. Let's shape the story. Let's mold the story. Let's mold public opinion. And it worked. It's the same thing that happens with the military. Public opinion is shaped. It's molded. The Department of Defense, rather than telling the truth about how Americans died in Afghanistan and Iraq, almost universally lied. They wanted to shape the story. They wanted to mold public opinion. The truth didn't serve their interest. The truth was appalling. The truth about what the CIA was doing was despicable. It was immoral. It's reprehensible. So what do they do? Let's shape the stories. Let's mold public opinion. It's pathetic. This is an agency of the U.S. government. Taxpayers are paying for this. And yet, they want to deliberately mislead those they're working for, those who are paying their salaries. Agency lawyers had, by that point, questioned whether officials could legally disclose any information about the interrogation, since the whole program was classified. Yeah, it's the term, of course, that the government uses when it doesn't want people to know how bad it really is. Oh, it's classified. But Mudd made clear that damaging news stories would have severe consequences. His email continued, Congress reads it, cuts out authorities, messes our budget. We need to make sure the impression of what we do is positive. We must be more aggressive out there. We must put out our story or we'll get eaten. There is no middle ground. Wow. This is Philip Mudd, the deputy director of the CIA's National Counterterrorism Center. And he says, you know, we can't have the truth out there. Congress will read it. If Congress finds out what we're really doing, they're going to cut out authorities. That means they're going to fire us. That means they're going to curtail what we're able to do. They're going to mess with our budget. That means we're going to get paid less. That means we're going to get fewer toys. They were purposefully misleading because they knew what they were doing was wrong, and that if it was known what they were doing, they would be held accountable, and the consequence would be they would be fired. Their budget would be diminished. They would lose their authority. So the conclusion by the CIA's National Counterterrorism Deputy Director was to be more aggressive, creating an impression of what we do is positive. Getting the impression that what we do is positive. In other words, do what Dick Cheney did. Said, oh yeah, it worked. It's working. Give them the impression that it's positive. It's working. Got played, America. You got played. You care? The Senate report suggests that Mudd's comments, of course, and course of action led the agency to indeed start putting its story out selectively, with sweeping claims of success that it was also making to the White House and the Justice Department. Sweeping claims of success amidst total depravity and complete failure. Wow. This wasn't just untrue. It was the antithesis of what was true. Claims that the report asserts do not hold up. All of the claims of sweeping successes were lies, according to the Senate's report. They lied. They made it up. The truth didn't work, so they deployed lies. On June, by the way, one of those lies is that Al-Qaeda perpetrated 9/11. That Al-Qaeda is a meaningful foe. That the United States is at war with terrorism. All of those are lies. Those are right to the core of it. That Islam is not responsible. All lies. On June 25th, 2005, for example, Dateline NBC aired a program about the war on terror. There you go. A war never declared on a tactic, which is impossible. That included interviews by anchor Tom Brokaw with Porter Goss, then director of the CIA, as well as with Philip Mudd. The Dateline story contained no reference to waterboarding or to other excruciating tactics such as rectal penetration and rehydration disclosed in the Senate report. In an accompanying online article, however, the network quoted senior intelligence analysts as saying that the information gleaned from CIA interrogations approaches or surpasses any other intelligence on the subject of Al-Qaeda and the construction of the network. Now, the truth is that if you want to know about Al-Qaeda and the construction of Al-Qaeda, you ought to go to Zbigniew Brzezinski. You ought to go to Gates. You ought to go to Jimmy Carter. They're all available for discussion. They created them. They built the network. They wanted more than just the Taliban. Yes, they rented the Taliban from the Pakistani government through the Pakistani military to go and fight a proxy war against the Russians in Afghanistan and then arm them. But you see, the Pakistani Taliban was insufficient for the cause, according to Robert Gates, according to Zbigniew Brzezinski, according to Jimmy Carter. They wanted more. They wanted more jihadists. And so they deployed Al-Qaeda, creating the base, which was a database of other willing jihadists from other Muslim countries to go fight in the great jihad. That's the creation of the network of Al-Qaeda. That's how it was created. Right then and there. You want intelligence on it? Read what they did. Ask them what they did. That's all you need. Now, if you want to know the motivations of the Al-Qaeda network, if you want to understand the goals of the Al-Qaeda network, if you want to understand why people join Al-Qaeda, if you want to understand why Al-Qaeda uses terrorism as a tactic, read the Quran. Read the Hadith. For $20, you can buy copies of both. Go online, free, prophetofdoom.net. You will gain more intelligence on the basis of Al-Qaeda, the motivations of Al-Qaeda, the beliefs of Al-Qaeda, the goals of Al-Qaeda, the methods of Al-Qaeda, if you were to simply read Prophet of Doom, than has ever been learned by the CIA or the NSA or NGIC, the National Ground Intelligence Center, or the FBI. That's the truth. Most CIA personnel were not aware, he wrote, that when the Post and New York Times quotes senior intel official, that it's us, that we're the authorized fellas within the CIA office to mislead the media. Last year, the Center reports the CIA started cooperating on a proposed New York Times story by reporter Douglas Zale, that, according to the CIA emails contained in the Senate report, quote, would emphasize that the CIA's enhanced interrogation programs worked and that they were approved through an interagency process and that the CIA went to great lengths to ensure that the interrogation programs were authorized by the White House and the Department of Justice. We know for a fact that they did not work. We know for a fact that they had no chance of working. We know for a fact that they were not enhanced interrogation procedures, because enhanced means to make better. We know, in fact, that it was torture. We know, in fact, that there was no interagency cooperation, but instead animosity. The only part of that that's true is that the White House approved the use of torture. That's it. They were preparing to lie to the New York Times. The chief of the CIA's Alec station, which targeted al-Qaeda, got excited despite concerns that leaking positive stories to the Time might undercut the agency's complaints about negative leaks from others about the secret interrogation program. He suggested in an email informing Jell, which is the New York Times, of other examples of CIA detention exploitation success. There was none. In fact, Jell and the Times didn't bite, and his proposed story never ran. Oh, a man that actually checked his sources. He knew he was getting played. The Rolling Stones journalist didn't have the same good sense. We'll return to this story and more when Shattering Myths continues after the break. By then, the CIA knew that what it was doing was illegal. And the New York Times journalist had tried to cooperate what he was hearing, the lies that were being shoved his way by the two senior individuals with the CIA, the deputy director of the Center for Counterterrorism. And as he was following up on other reports, he realized, particularly from the FBI, that he was being deceived. He was being played about the CIA's rough treatment of prisoners and how counterproductive torture had actually been. So he just dropped the story. A few days before the exchange, Jell, the New York Times correspondent, had picked up on the story first disclosed in Newsweek that one of the agency's most important detainees, Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi, who had been rendered by the CIA to Egyptian intelligence, had recanted his claim that Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein had provided chemical and biological weapons to al-Qaeda. And it didn't happen. It was impossible to happen. You know, this idea that, you know, the CIA, we found out that he provided these weapons to al-Qaeda. Saddam Hussein and bin Laden were arch enemies. They despised one another. There was a 0% possibility that Saddam Hussein would do something fortuitous on behalf of bin Laden and al-Qaeda. The benefactor of bin Laden and al-Qaeda was the United States. And the source of chemical weapons to Iraq was the United States. We're the evil player in all of this. We're the dark horse of the apocalypse. We're the writer whose name is Death. The Al Libi story had been a huge embarrassment for the CIA. It was so obvious it was untrue. I mean, that's the problem with torture is it results in fabricated claims. And the problem with the attitude of the CIA and the federal government, where they are fired if they're discriminating. They're fired if they exercise good judgment. They're fired if they consider Islam. That they had no way of understanding how much anger, how much hatred there was between bin Laden and Saddam Hussein. They didn't understand why there was no terrorism in Iraq. And part of that is because George W. Bush and Dick Cheney were out there telling the world that Saddam Hussein was promoting, sheltering, providing safe harbor for, in cahoots with Al-Qaeda, when he knew for a fact the opposite was true. But because the president had said it so many times, the CIA is not going to undermine the president's justification for invading Iraq, even though they had to know it was a lie. So they bought into this idea that Saddam Hussein had provided chemical and biological weapons to Al-Qaeda per their interrogation of Libby. Obviously not true. Of course, it embarrassed the CIA. FBI officials had complained loudly when CIA officers whisked him away for their agents in Afghanistan, strapping him on a stretcher, sealing his mouth with duct tape, and threatening him before flying him off to Egypt. Al-Libi's later claim of a Saddam Al-Qaeda link detailed in the CIA reporting to the White House later became the main basis for some of the most alarming assertions about such ties by George W. Bush and then Secretary of State Colin Powell at the United Nations. Al-Libi was their source. They interrogated him. They tortured him. He gave them information that was the opposite of what was true. And the idiots, Colin Powell, George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, the chorus of clowns, they ate it up. Ignorant, irresponsible, irrational. They believed a statement from a known liar provided under torture. And that was good enough for them. No, the history of what had transpired in Iraq, the known history, no, we're going to ignore that. The known history of the dealings between Iraq and Al-Qaeda, no, we're going to ignore that. The reason that Saddam, as a secularist, despised Al-Qaeda and wouldn't allow them into his country, we're going to ignore that. You know how George W. Bush and Dick Cheney went around the country telling us that one of the prime justifications, if not the prime justification for invading Iraq, was the league between, the alliance between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein. Well, they bought into Libby's confession under torture. So not only, Dick, did torture not work, it made you look stupid. That's what torture did. It made you look stupid. You invaded a country. You broke a country. You made a decision that led to 10,000 Americans dying. You squandered $4 trillion of Americans' treasure. You started the war in Syria all because you believed a lie that was extracted under torture. Man, if that's working, Dick, you've got a serious problem. Imagine that. Here they claim the program worked. The lead guy that they tortured, Libby, tells them an egregious lie, the opposite of what's true, and they buy it. And look at the consequence. How many Americans died as a result of that? how much American treasure was squandered, how much of America's reputation was destroyed because we invaded Iraq on a lie. And we maintain our presence there, breaking that country, making a bad situation worse based on a lie. You know, the truth is that Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein, bin Laden and Saddam Hussein, were such enemies that when, after America had deployed Al-Qaeda, conceived Al-Qaeda, for the express purpose of fighting the proxy war along beside the Taliban against the Russian-backed government in Afghanistan. After we had created the hell for Afghanistan through that process, lying to the world about our role in it, by the way, the Al-Qaeda had realized, you know, we've got this huge now database of willing jihadists. They're all trained to use American weapons. They're equipped with American weapons. And we just brought down the second most powerful military in the world with these jihadists and with these weapons. So when Saddam Hussein, a secularist, invaded Kuwait, which was in the world's best interest, was in America's best interest, and was thinking about invading Saudi Arabia, bin Laden went to the sheikhs, the Saud family, and said, let us use these weapons and our jihadists to drive Saddam Hussein back. He is the enemy. He is the infidel. He is secular. We'll go to war against him. If we can beat the Russians, we sure as hell can beat the Iraqis. But you see, as a fellow Muslim, the sheikhs and royal family in Saudi Arabia knew that when you empower a monster like a fundamentalist Muslim jihadist, there is no way to keep that snake from turning and biting you later on. It is a snake, after all. Look what happened with the Islamic State. Look what happened with al-Nusra. Saudi Arabia armed them to thwart the expansion of Shia Islam, and now it's biting them. You can't control a snake. Even when you have it by the tail, it'll turn and bite you. So, at the same time, George Bush, whose family had been enriched by the bin Ladens, whose family had been enriched by the Sauds, and continues to be enriched by them, says, no, let America push them back. You know, America, shock and awe, we can do it. And the Sauds chose America. And so disgraced was bin Laden that the infidels would be called to defend the holy lands of Islam as opposed to the most fundamentalist Muslims, that he vowed retribution against the United States. 9/11 was the plot that Ramzi Youssef came up with, but bin Laden loved the idea of being able to bloody America. It's a direct response of what George Bush did. But it demonstrates that Saddam Hussein and bin Laden were arch enemies. And so for George Bush II and Colin Powell et al., Condoleezza, I am a moron Rice, Dick full of crap Cheney, to believe the confession elicited by torture from Libby means that they had to ignore all known evidence to the contrary. Had to ignore it. Why did they ignore it? Because the evidence, the truth, didn't serve their agenda. The lie did. And they began to promote the lie. Why don't we hold George Bush, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, Dick Cheney accountable for promoting a known lie elicited under torture? And, of course, it was repeated in the media. When I was doing talk shows at the time, they said, yeah, but we're fighting Al-Qaeda. We're keeping the world free about... No, we're not. No Al-Qaeda in Iraq. They bought into the lie. It is proof positive that not only didn't the program work, it was counterproductive. Now, I would tell you that even if you could give an example of one bit of intelligence that somehow led to a courier, that somehow led to the vaccination program, that somehow led to the compound that bin Laden was hiding in plain sight under the nose of the Pakistan Military Academy. If that were all made possible because of torture, I would tell you that that tidbit on a 1 to 100 scale of value is a 1. And I would tell you that the deception that Saddam Hussein and bin Laden were in cahoots and that Saddam Hussein was supplying chemical and biological weapons to Al-Qaeda for a mass attack on the world that we had to go thwart, in terms of being counterproductive, that's 100 on a 100-to-1 scale because of the consequence of American behavior and response. So let's just say that one thing worked. By the way, I don't think it did, but let's just say one irrelevant thing worked. I mean, killing bin Laden didn't do anybody any good. He was a lonely, pathetic figure when he was killed. He had no troops. He had no territory. He had no money. He had no following. He had nothing. He was a lonely, pathetic figure when he died. Killing him was irrelevant. And yet, America lost 10,000 Americans, $4 trillion of our treasure, and created a Middle Eastern war between Sunni and Shia Islam as a result of this lie. It's 100 versus the 1. And I'm telling you that political correctness and this lack of exercising good judgment that is now indoctrinated academically, that it causes people to look at a small, insignificant benefit and ignore the cost. For example, they'll say, well, Saddam Hussein was a bad guy, so killing him was good. Well, actually, Saddam Hussein was a bad guy, but he was the best dictator in the Middle East. And if you're going to say killing him is good, then you've got to put in for what price? Was killing him at any price good? Was killing him to the point, now he'd never killed an American, so I don't know why we thought that we needed to kill him, but was sacrificing 10,000 American lives to kill him worthwhile? You've got to put things in context. You have to make the comparison. For example, okay, the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. We can't just let them get away with it. Well, are you willing to sacrifice 300,000 American lives for vengeance? Is that moral? Is that appropriate? Is that good? Consequence. Cost. Let's say you did get one tidbit, and it led to the killing of bin Laden. Lonely, isolated figure at that time. No one was listening to him. No one was motivated by him. How does that stack up against the lie that Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein were in cahoots? And American behavior and media and public opinion that were wrongly shaped by that lie. Cost. Consequence. Al Libby's claims were shown to be untrue. Colin Powell's claims, the United Nations, were all shown to be untrue. It was all a hoax. And Jill in the New York Times reported that it was all a hoax on December 9th of 2005. In recanting his story after he was returned to CIA custody after the U.S. invasion of Iraq, Al-Libi later said that he made up the whole thing in an effort to stop his torture. According to the CIA cables, he had been beaten and thrown into a confinement box, the coffin. He made it up to stop the torture. It was all a hoax. I mean, I don't know what to say, listeners, friends, family. Don't know what to tell you. It's a sober moment. If you don't come to despise George W. Bush, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, Dick Cheney, Mueller, the head of the CIA, this fellow Mudd that was deputy director of the counterintelligence terrorism unit, if you don't come to despise all of them, if you don't want to see all of them held accountable, incarcerated for what they did, for the lives that they sacrificed, for the money they squandered, for the reputation that they destroyed, I don't know what you need to know. The Senate reports hint that there are far more details about all of this in a still classified volume. It describes briefly in a heavily redacted footnote how Al Libby told his debriefers about hearing sobbing and yelling by a prisoner being beaten in a neighboring cell. The yet-to-be-released Al Libby cable suggests there was even more evidence to come of what some FBI agents had been trying to say from the very beginning, that brutal attacks don't work. They do not yield useful intelligence. Reuters is reporting that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said before talks on Monday with U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry that he would defy any United Nations move to dictate a time frame for withdrawal from the land that says Palestinians seek for a state. There's no such thing as a Palestinian, and who gives a crap what they want? They're Islamic terrorists. They're thugs. They have never honored any agreement they've ever made. They're wholly dependent. They're more dysfunctional than the Ukrainians. They're totally dependent on the rest of the world for charity. They don't work. They don't do anything worthwhile. They indoctrinate their children to hate. They have a long legacy of ruthlessness. To give them a state is stupid. The pair met in Rome for nearly 3 hours. Before the meeting, Israel put the United Nations on notice that it expected Washington to exercise its Security Council veto against any resolution setting a time frame. And in the past, that was pretty straightforward. You know, you've got a lot of skunks in the United Nations, a lot of Islamic nations, of course, and then anti-Semitism is growing around the world. And then in Europe, there's no morality. So the United Nations, the only country ever willing to actually exercise its veto is the United States. But the abominator, he's a Muslim sympathizer. He will always side with Islam over Israel. So, you know, there's no coincidence that he attended the anti-Semitic Reverend Wright's church. He's an anti-Semite. He's a Muslim sympathizer. He hates Jews. So that commitment is no longer solid. It's one of the reasons why America got a woe from Yahweh in Yeshayahu 18. Jordan has circulated a Palestinian draft document resolution to a 15-member council calling for Israeli occupation of Palestinian land to end by November of 2016. There is no such thing as a Palestinian. There's no such thing as a place called Palestine. There is no such thing as Palestinian land. And there's no such thing as Israeli occupation. All of that is a lie. Now, the United Nations will probably eat it up. They love lies. The United States have indicated that Washington did not find the Palestinian draft acceptable, but said that with matters still fluid, it is premature to take a position now on any particular Security Council resolution. In other words, we no longer have any character in America. Whether we have the 9 votes at the Security Council or don't, the decision has been taken to present the Palestinian Arab resolution in the Security Council on Wednesday. Why don't we just call it what it is, the Muslim resolution, said Wasil Abu Yusuf, an official of the PLO, Palestine Liberation Organization, the PLO. Prior to us making a mountain out of a molehill with Al-Qaeda, the PLO was the most ruthless terrorist organization on the planet. PLO is responsible for the death of Robert Kennedy. the PLO is responsible for the death of the Israeli astronauts at the Munich, Israeli athletes at the Munich Games. The PLO is responsible for introducing modern terrorism to the world. They're responsible for orchestrating airline hijackings, blowing up buses, suicide bombings. It's all the PLO. The Palestinians' highest decision-making body, led by President Mahmoud Abbas, yeah, the PLO, is the highest decision-making body of these scumbags. The mythical people known as the Palestinians, UN Ambassador Riyad Mansour said that on Wednesday that most... Why would they even have an ambassador? I mean, they're not a people. They're not a nation. Why would they have an ambassador? They're not a people. They're not a nation. Well, likely a draft will be put in blue. I don't know what that means. It means the resolution could be put up to a vote as soon as 24 hours later, though it does not guarantee that it will be put to a vote. Jordan's UN ambassador, Dina Kawar, I wonder what side Jordan is going to be on, said that she did not receive any requests regarding action on the Palestinian draft. When asked if she was expecting any developments at the Security Council this week, she said no, because Mr. Kerry is having meetings in Europe with a number of ministers, so we're waiting to see what happens. Kerry planned to travel on Monday for talks with counterparts in France, Britain, and Germany, all of which are resolutely anti-Semitic. On Tuesday, he will meet with Palestinian chief negotiator Saeb Erekat in London, an ultimate scumbag. So what are we going to do? What's the United States going to do this time around? Have we any character left?